having therapy day one. Disclosure statements. Obligatory, probably not necessary. For the purposes of today's training, which is on problem-solving therapy, I just wanted to make sure that it was noted that no relevant financial relationships or non-financial relationships are included in this particular offering. I personally don't have any financial or non-financial relationships in the products that will be talked about. And we'll get into that in just a bit, but sneak preview. The core and foundations of this particular training is guided from the problem-solving therapy treatment manual. I have a slide that actually shows you where you can purchase this manual if interested. One of the services that the UCLA PMHP team do provide is distribution of books to several FSP teams. So your team might also have this manual here. But we will definitely review that in a second. So this is why I didn't decide to go through the pain of swapping in and out of screens. So to get started, we're going to watch a very brief, about 5.5 short film. It was actually Oscar nominated, called Sweet Cocoon. And I hope that this will set the tone in the way that it is intended for today's training on problem solving.
Oh.
Lovely image to, I think, demonstrate in what we as clinicians, as therapists, as case managers might be able to resonate with ultimately is that our clients are caterpillars blossoming, caterpillars who we see the potential. We see, you know, the challenges that they're facing in their journey and on their path towards becoming, developing into the butterflies, so to say, that we ultimately see and case plan and case treat around. And we're on the ground. We're the two bugs that are the problem solvers, so to say, right? Assisting our caterpillars achieve those goals. And sometimes the goals are manifested, and in other ways, not exactly how we quite envisioned them or foresaw that happening. So just a cute kind of way to dive into problem solving therapy. Today, we are going to identify the problems and populations that problem solving therapy has been proven effective in. And excuse me, over the next 2 days. So over the next couple of days, we'll do the following. We're also going to examine treatment strategies that incorporate problem-solving techniques and tools. We're going to explain an individual's problem-solving orientation and problem-solving abilities and attitudes. And you're going to have some tools. You're going to get some hands-on worksheets, some hands-on tools that you can actually implement with your clients with problem-solving therapy. Those toolkits are identified as the four problem-solving toolkits. So we'll review all of those over the next couple of days. So seems like some of you have some type of baseline, which is awesome, around what problem-solving therapy is. And so problem-solving therapy, for those of you who don't have a baseline, is a treatment approach that is grounded in CBT, and that is cognitive behavioral therapy. So although problem-solving therapy, which I'll refer to throughout today as PST, is listed as a therapy, as it can be a therapeutic treatment all among itself, there are skills that many people and professionals can utilize for themselves or those that they work with. These skills can also be used outside of a psychotherapeutic context. So these skills can be applied in case management, medical settings, housing, peer work, many other situations. In fact, PST has been used in medical settings by nurses and doctors to assist patients who are dealing with terminal diagnosis or chronic health conditions that need to be managed on a daily basis. So all applicable in all types of environments and spaces with patients and clients. The great thing about PST is that it is not a complicated treatment modality, which I hope as we continue through today that you will also agree with and co-sign. And it involves the use of toolkits, like I briefly introduced, right? Involves a lot of psychoeducation. And of course, the heart of any work, case management, clinical work, medical practitioner work, it involves a strong therapeutic relationship with your clients. And just know it's not necessarily about giving advice, but allowing choice, allowing the individuals to make their own decisions. And as professionals, our job is to simply create the framework and structure for the individuals to solve his or her problems. So as I promised earlier, this is the problem-solving therapy treatment manual. Not promotion, but just a slide to offer you with the opportunity to A, see what our training is based on today, and then where the book can be purchased at, and that's springerpub.com. So we're just gonna briefly just discuss the evidence. Problem-solving therapy is an evidence-based model, and so the authors of the model hypothesized that actually, if more studies were conducted, they may be able to see that PST is more effective than other bona fide treatments. Bona fide is actually a technical word, and in Latin, it means in good faith. So, in this study, they found that PST was slightly more effective than other bona fide treatments. However, the difference was not statistically significant. And some of those other treatments, the bona fide treatments, so to say, that were identified include family behavioral therapy, cognitive behavioral education, the Millen approach, interactional therapy, rational emotive behavior therapy, certain prescribed medications such as Prozac and Paxil, and behavioral parent management training. Okay. So once again, not statistically significant to show that the difference was slightly more effective, but nonetheless an effective treatment modality. And why? What did they find? So, in a meta-analysis in 2009, authors found that PST is an effective intervention for reducing depressive symptomatology. And in some studies, reviewed PST statistically significant small to medium effect and more effective. But other studies found that it was effective overall, but maybe not so much more than other treatment options. So pretty much what was just summarized. Another evidence, another study that was reviewed in a meta-analysis, this a little bit more recently in 2013, found when comparing seven different psychotherapeutic approaches, including supportive counseling, social skills therapy, CBT, to mention a few, that not one of these treatments was significantly better than the others in treating depression. So, pretty significant here. The important piece to note in the three slides about the evidence is that PST is just one option among many for working with people who experience depression or psychosocial stressors. So, pretty much if you learn to, use components from PST, it's like having another tool in your toolbox. And this may work with some people while it may not work so much for others, right? So it's all about that client's lens and being client-centered in your approaches, of course. All right, so overall summary, the evidence. What we can stand on is that PST is another tool that can be used to work with individuals in FSP and also the other settings and places and spaces that you all work in with your clients. And PST supports an individual's autonomy, facilitates an internal locus of control, and improves self-esteem. So it would be a little remiss to not talk about CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, as the precursor before we dive into the content around problem-solving therapy. And that's because, as mentioned earlier, PST is rooted heavily in CBT, which I'm sure a lot of you all are familiar with, since CBT is recognized as the grandfather of most therapeutic-based models and interventions. So, quick refresher of cognitive behavioral therapy. CBT is a form of talking therapy, which can be used to treat people with a wide range of mental health problems. CBT is based on the idea that how we think or our cognition, how we feel, our emotions, and how we act, our behavior, all interact together, like the graphic on the slide. Specifically, CBT is based on how our thoughts determine our feelings and our behaviors. So let's take a look at an example. An event is perceived. After that event, an automatic thought is created. Once that thought is created, that flows into a strong emotional reaction that's being experienced. And based off of that reaction, a behavioral response takes place. So in real time, let's use this events being this training to serve as an example of this flowchart. Okay, so the event proceeds. Today, I am attending a training. Automatic thought created. Trainings are boring, or I just really don't have time for this. I could be doing a million other things with my time. An emotional reaction experienced is I'm anxious being here, thinking about the other things on my to-do list, or I'm irritated. Maybe Danielle took forever to set up the training and maneuver through the technical difficulties. And then lastly, a behavioral response takes place. So because I'm anxious or irritated, I guess I'll just play on my phone instead. Who's gonna know? Not that any of you are doing that, of course. So let's get into it. Let's talk about and more closely define some of these key terms and concepts, right? So an automatic thought, what is that? Exactly what it sounds like, a thought that quickly arises as a result of a situation. However, the tricky part about automatic thoughts is that they tend to, in most cases, have some inaccuracy, if not altogether inaccurate, and they are maladaptive thoughts. So they are, you know, contribute negatively. Negative and unrealistic thoughts can cause us distress and ultimately result in problems, right? So when a person suffers with psychological distress, the way that they interpret situations becomes a little wonky. It gets skewed, and then that can snowball, right? And have a negative impact on the actions that they take. All right. Cognitive distortions. This is the heart of CBT, unpacking, labeling, naming the cognitive distortions that are the roots of these automatic thoughts. And so the general assumptions are that with the cognitive approach, the belief is that mental illness actually stems from faulty cognitions or thoughts about others, our world, and us, ourselves. And this faulty thinking may be through cognitive deficiencies, such as a lack of planning, or cognitive distortions, which is ultimately processing information, as just mentioned, inaccurately, right? And so as you all can see, these are the main cognitive distortions as defined through CBT. And just hints, keep these in mind. We will definitely be looking at an example in the next coming slides, and we'll be naming and labeling the client's cognitive distortions. So for your review, first we have all or nothing thinking, which is defined as everything is either all good or all bad. There is no middle ground. Also, if it helps, you can think about clients or people in general in your life that kind of make these different distortions come to life for you. That's personally how I remember a lot of them myself. But don't put that in the chat and don't say who you're thinking of out loud. Next, overgeneralizing, forming an opinion or judgment on an entire group of people, places, things based on one or a few examples. Then we have negative filters, not being able to see the good or positive aspects. Jumping to conclusions, assuming one knows how a situation will play out. Bias confirmation, only finding evidence to support one's own point of view. Catastrophizing, making a bad situation seem worse than what it really is. And lastly, personalization, assuming that something is about oneself when it may be entirely unrelated. All right, this is just another way to visualize and conceptualize through the lens of the components of CBT. Using that example of the training and the behaviors coming with the training, what is going on at each stage, right? So first you have a valid observation, attending a training, completely valid, right? And then here comes the use of cognitive distortions. Trainings are boring, I don't have time. And in the emotional reaction, based on that cognitive distortion and negative core belief arises, being irritated or anxious. And here comes that fun maladaptive behavior. I'll play on my phone instead. So CBT's aim is to help people become aware of when they make negative interpretations and of the behavioral patterns that reinforce that distorted thinking. Cognitive therapy helps people to develop alternative ways of thinking and behaving, which aims to reduce the psychological distress. So let's make this practical through using an example. So feel free to read along with me as I read on the screen. Marion was at the clinic to meet with her psychiatrist. Marion shared with the psychiatrist that she has still been experiencing some of the symptoms that have been plaguing her. The psychiatrist talked with Marion about her treatment options, and they agreed to make a slight increase to her antidepressant medication. When Marion got home, she started to cry. Her boyfriend hugged her and asked what was wrong. Marion stated that she thinks that her psychiatrist thinks she's crazy. Her medication was increased. Marion went on to say that she is never going to be independent from medications, and she should just stop thinking that she can have a successful future or start a family. All right, so using the flow chart as our starting point here. And this is actually, if you're interested in taking a screenshot of this, a useful imagery for some of your clients that you might want to utilize as another tool of yours. So using Marion's vignette, the event perceives, I've been prescribed an increase in medications. The automatic thought that was created is I'm going crazy. The emotional reaction experience, I'm angry, I'm disappointed. And then the behavioral response takes place. She just shuts down, stops planning for the future, gets upset, yells at the boyfriend. All right, so now I'm gonna offer the opportunity for you all to engage with me here and going through some questions about Marion. So please feel free to come off of mute if you want, or use the chat, whatever is most helpful for you. So first up, what are some possible automatic thoughts that Marion may have had about this situation? One of them was already provided. It says medication increase, meaning I'm not going to get better. Shame and fear giving up. Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, the fun part, what cognitive distortions did Marion use? Personalization and catastrophizing. I definitely agree with catastrophizing. Yeah, Marion thinks that she should altogether just give up on the idea of having a successful future or starting a family, right? Negative filter. Yeah, for sure. Marion's unable to see the positive aspects of increasing medications to support her treatment outcomes. Definitely would agree with that. Definitely. Absolutely. She's also jumping to conclusions about her future. Yeah, definitely. And her adjustment to the medication. Yeah, I agree. And so what are some possible negative core beliefs that Marion may have about herself? Earlier you said shame and fear. Although that would be an emotional response. The core belief I see you put, I'm not going to get better. Okay, so Marion might have low self-esteem, low self-confidence, and a low self-efficacy about her own abilities to get better. And that's why she's been prescribed medication, right? Another core belief was that she must be crazy, right? Based off of what she said. I apologize. I know it's hard without seeing the other screens that had the scenario. And yeah, psychiatrists think she is crazy. Absolutely. All right, so we're going to now read through an example still with Marion about how this same event can be filtered and perceived with a more rational lens. So Marion came back home from her psychiatrist and was greeted by her boyfriend. "How was your appointment, Marion?" Scott asked. Marion replied, "It was okay. We decided that we'll try an increase in my antidepressant. I really appreciate that the doctor involved me in this decision. However, I'm somewhat disappointed that it needed to be increased. Either way, having a better handle on my mental health will help me to finish college." Okay, so as you all can see, it's all about the perception. I'm sure that you can definitely relate to this scenario with the work you do with your clients, even just your own, you know, I'm sure we can think of our own personal examples and how the way that we name, label, and events influences our perception, which influences the thoughts. And although Marion acknowledged, you know, her emotional response, disappointment, that the medication needed to be increased, the cognitive distortions are out the window. She recognizes that, you know, there could be a positive benefit due to this increase in her medication when helping her finish college. And you all have been great. So now we get to dive into PST. So let's start with some key concepts. Ultimately, the key treatment objectives of problem-solving therapy are as follows: enhancing positive problem orientation, decreasing negative problem orientation, fostering planful problem-solving, minimizing avoidant problem-solving, minimizing impulsive slash careless problem solving. So we're going to define positive problem orientation, negative problem orientation, and we'll also talk about in the upcoming slides that planful problem solving, avoidant problem solving, and impulsive or careless problem solving are actually problem solving styles. So we'll unpack those and look into those a bit closely. But just wanted to provide you with an overview of the key treatment objectives. And so some clinical considerations, just the alliteration, the C's. Clinical considerations to keep in mind with PST. As with most treatment approaches, the relationship is extremely important, right? So the therapeutic alliance that you have, whether you be a case manager or nurse practitioner, but that alliance with your patient and client is the cornerstone. That's the foundation. Okay. The clinician should demonstrate person-centered skills such as unconditional positive regard, empathy, and genuineness. The clinician should also show hope that the individual can succeed in learning and applying problem-solving skills, and be creative. And, you know, flexibility is everything, right? Client choice, autonomy, as we mentioned earlier, is definitely centered and emphasized in PST. So be creative. Allow the individual to practice PST in the sessions as well, which we will talk about in a second. So, as promised, the key concepts of PST. However, I recognized while developing the training for today that we dive right into some key concepts without actually discussing how problem according to PST is defined. So according to the authors, the Nezus and DeZarilla, a problem is defined as a life situation, present or anticipated, that A, requires an adaptive response in order to prevent immediate or long-term negative consequences. For example, difficulty regaining practical and or emotional homeostasis. And a problem is defined as B, an effective response that is not immediately apparent or available to the person experiencing the situation due to the existence of obstacles or barriers. Obstacles or barriers, I want to note, can be external factors to that individual, such as maybe a lack of resources or a barrier to resources. And they can also be internal factors, such as we saw with Marion, maybe low self-efficacy, maybe low self-confidence, but a belief system that's distorted, right? And so the key concepts in PST, problem orientation. Problem orientation is the adoption of an adaptive worldview or orientation toward problems in life, such as optimism, positive self-efficacy, acceptance that problems are common occurrences in life. And of course, there's both positive and negative problem orientation, which we'll get into in a second. And then to define the other core key concept of PST, problem-solving styles. All right, keep in mind there's three different problem-solving styles that we will discuss further. And as defined here, the effective problem-solving styles are the effective implementation of specific problem-solving behaviors. For example, emotional regulation and management, as well as planful problem-solving. So problem orientation, basically it's how problems are viewed. And consistent with cognitive behavioral therapy, people view problems differently based on what? Their perceptions, experiences, self-beliefs, knowledge, right? And as mentioned, in general, people can have both a positive or negative problem orientation. And when I say people can have both a positive or negative problem orientation, that just means that it's not a fixed type of approach to have at any given point in life. There might be maybe based off of resources that you have access to, or maybe based off of your own self-confidence at that given time that can influence your fluidity and flexibility in addressing a problem. Whereas at some point in life, maybe there's an absence of those things, a decrease in those components, and that could, you know, orient you a little bit more negatively to approaching problems, right? And as Captain Jack Sparrow has said verbatim, the problem is not the problem. The problem is your attitude about the problem. So let's talk about negative problem orientation. Just to note, Frederick Douglass is not shown here as an example of someone who is a negative problem oriented individual, but rather to demonstrate the ability to persist through problems. As provided on the screen in direct quotation, if there is no struggle, there is no progress. So Frederick Douglass would be, in terms of the types of problem solvers, which we'll talk about, right? More of the planful problem solver. But someone who has negative problem orientation would, you could characterize or archetype them as the pessimist, but just wanted to distinguish Frederick Douglass is not shown on the screen as an example of the quote unquote pessimist problem solving archetype here. So the pessimist with a negative problem orientation would, as shown on the screen, perceive problems as threats to oneself or others, think that problems are not solvable, lack the confidence that they are able to, in fact, solve the problem, as well as have a difficult time accepting that negative emotions are naturally a part of a problem-solving process at times. Okay, so In this chart, we can see how certain examples of negative thoughts correlate to certain cognitive distortions, and then how you can flip the script by challenging that cognitive distortion, and what an example of a more rational viewpoint or a positive problem-oriented viewpoint would view the negative thought. So, negative thought number one, I just can't do this. Cognitive distortion, jumping to conclusions, a more accurate view. This is a challenge, but you may actually be able to do this. Second negative thought, I've never experienced anything like this before. The cognitive distortion associated to that is overgeneralization. With a more accurate viewpoint, this is a new experience, but there are aspects that may be familiar. Next negative thought, everything about this situation is awful. Cognitive distortion, all or nothing thinking. In a more accurate view, overall, the situation is not good. Excuse me, but there may be some positives. Next negative thought, why do things like this always happen to me? Cognitive distortion, personalization, more accurate view. Other people also experience challenges like this. And lastly, we have think of all the times that I failed at things like this. Cognitive distortion is having a negative filter, and a more accurate view would be there may be some successes that are overlooked. I know. I have heard the popular one, why do things like this always happen to me, a lot with my work with clients. All right, so the positive problem orientation. So once again, person represented, Saweetie, she is not here as an archetype of a positive problem-oriented individual. But really, just to show a face to this quote, I know where I want to end up. I'm ready to go and I'm ready to learn. I'm ready to build and I'm ready to establish my longevity. So, based off of that, we can see that in terms of having an orientation around challenges and hurdles, can represent the following that opportunities, problems, excuse me, are opportunities for learning something new. That the challenges they represent can contribute to personal growth. That, you know, there's a belief that problems can be solved. Effective problem solving requires resources such as time and energy, and an acceptance that negative emotions are part of the problem solving process. All right, so you can also consider the positive problem-oriented person, which is the planful problem solver, as more of the optimist as compared to the pessimist. And so, as promised, here are the problem-solving styles. So, I, however, recognize these are not defined on the screen, so I will briefly define each. So, planful problem solving or the planful problem solver style involves systematic and thoughtful applications of defining the problem, generating alternatives, having high skills in decision making, and is really solution oriented. Once again, short and easy way to remember that planful problem solver is the optimist. Next up, the avoidance style or the avoider is characterized by procrastination, passivity, inaction, as well as dependency on others to solve the problems for them. The preference is to avoid problems rather than to confront them head on. And lastly, the impulsive slash careless problem solving style is also known as the quick fixer. And so this style is narrow, it's hurried, and also incomplete at solving a problem. The impulsive or quick fixer often just goes with the first solution that comes to mind and therefore lacks some thoughtfulness around key decision making. All right, pretty self-explanatory. Any questions before we dive into our next vignette for today? Feel free to read along with me as we talk about Eddie. So, Eddie has been on unemployment since he lost his serving job 3 months ago. He is an aspiring musician, and the time on unemployment has really helped him to focus on his talent. However, his unemployment is running out, and he is scared that he won't be able to afford rent at his sober living. When Eddie thinks about his next move, he feels very anxious. He notices that his desire to use substances creeps into his mind. For this reason, he distracts himself by listening to music by artists that he looks up to. So, now that we talked about the different types of problem-solving styles, throw your best guesses in the chat. What type of problem-solving style is Eddie? A, planful, B, avoidant, or C, impulsive slash careless? Yes, everyone's unanimous. Everyone's correct. Absolutely. Absolutely. B, avoidant, right? So with avoidance, problem solving, as you can see in this scenario with Eddie, he's distracting himself. The problem solving style is built into the vignette. And as well, excuse me, as using substances, right? A big indicator of an avoidance personality type for sure. And if you consider why ultimately Eddie is anxious, he is facing a lot of unknowns, a lot of insecurity, financially speaking, and naturally that can make anyone anxious. And Eddie is linked to FSP. So as Eddie feels his anxiety rise and his craving to use increase, he decides that it might be best to talk to his FSP case manager. His FSP case manager is not Cesar Chavez, but it is someone who is oriented similarly to Cesar Chavez. And also believes that you are never strong enough, that you don't need help. And so Eddie has heard his case manager say this before, and he feels completely comfortable coming to him. And the case manager is going to walk Eddie through planful problem solving. So the components that we hope to instill and help train the clients that we work with in of planful problem solving are as follows: defining the problem and determining a realistic set of goals that can be achieved to solve the problem. Secondly, we want to help support our clients and empower our clients to develop a range of solutions. We then want to support the client with deciding on a solution, so some decisional balance making. And then lastly, we want to help the client actually implement the solution that they decide, because right, it's their choice, and then assess afterwards. Let's talk about it. How did that go? All right, so the problem. Let's define the problem. Eddie wants to focus on his music, but needs to work until his music career actually takes off, which makes it more difficult to in turn work on his music. So I am going to attempt here to add a file in the chat without screwing anything up. As you all can see, listed are some guiders for what handouts will help you build up your toolkits to in turn provide tools in your work with your clients. And so I'll be providing the PDF that has these handouts in them in the chat for you so you can download. There are screenshots on the slides upcoming directly from the PDF as well. We're still working with Eddie now. And we're talking with Eddie about what is the real problem. So once again, feel free to download that PDF from the chat, and it is going to have every single handout reviewed today. And also it'll be, a bit bigger on the screen. I recognize this might be a little small. But as you can see, and I'm squinting myself. So defining the problem, you will use this sheet to help your client or Eddie, in this case, identify what are the facts. So this is where you're going to describe the problem and be very clear and encourage clients to separate facts from assumptions. And you're going to help client understand why is this a problem for you. If you are unable to improve this situation or the way you are feeling, what are the consequences of that? Why is this an important problem for you to improve? And how will improving the problem improve your life, even in a small way? Then you're going to do some goal setting. What are your goals? Making sure that they're realistic and attainable, but starting with small goals that will be the stepping stones towards the larger goal. And then lastly, identifying the obstacles to the goal. What are some barriers? What are some challenges? And what is actually getting in the way with your ability to work towards your goal? So, starting with just taking an element off of that worksheet, the goal, what would you all say, according to Eddie, right? So, this isn't our own idea of what Eddie's top priority is, but according to Eddie, which of the following is a top priority goal? A, finding a job, B, balancing work and goal setting, C, to become famous, D, to have a sense of purpose, E, to remain sober, F, to develop a plan. Okay, Eddie wants to focus on his music, but needs to work. All right. Back to the vignettes. And one. Eddie's been on unemployment since he lost his serving job 3 months ago. He is an aspiring musician, and his time on unemployment has really helped him to focus on his talent. However, his unemployment is running out, and he is scared that he will not be able to afford his rent. Okay. So just wanted to review that. As a result, Eddie starts increasing in cravings to use due to his anxiety. Okay, reaches out to his FSP case manager. So, top goals for Eddie: finding a job, balancing work and goal setting, becoming famous, having a sense of purpose, remaining sober, developing a plan. So some brave souls already pulled into the chat. So B, to balance work and goal setting. Agreed. E, D, and B. Let's start. Oh yeah, remaining sober, having a sense of purpose, balancing work and goal setting. A, finding a job. B, what is B? Balancing work and goal settings. F, developing a plan. I'm in agreement. I'm in agreement. This was a bit of a trick question here. There is no one right answer. And as we saw, Eddie has a lot of competing priorities in a sense around the goals that are rooted in his problem at this point in his life. So everybody wins. So the next tool that, as the FSP case manager, we can use with Eddie, especially given these different goals, are generating alternative solutions. And so keep in mind that when developing alternative solutions, These guidelines are pretty fundamental. Come up with plenty of ideas. So in this case, it's not about quality, but quantity. And we'll go through an example where you'll get to see what I mean by that in a little bit, but generating all types of ideas, whether silly or not, but just throwing, like a teacher of mine used to say, spaghetti on the walls and seeing what's going to stick. Another guideline is avoid placing judgment at this stage in the game, right? The goal is just to throw the Hail Mary and see what's going to land here. And also, variety is important. So this particular worksheet, you can find on page 23 in that PDF manual. If it's not exactly page 23, because sometimes pages, as we know, in PDF files jump around, it will look like this, but it's just titled Generating Alternative Solutions. And the little instructional prompt at the top is the summary of the slide that I just read from, in case you're trying to squint and read that. So back to Eddie. So some possible solutions. And remember, we're focusing with all types of solutions, varieties, all the things. So working hard at music, hoping for success before unemployment runs out. So just continue to work hard, making music, using MEF to help generate ideas for music. And keep in mind, this is from the vantage point of your client, right? So you are not, and I would never endorse encouraging your clients to use, especially their drug of choice and that they are trying to recover from. But remember, we're exercising non-judgment and allowing our clients to conceptualize all of the solutions that they think at this point in time will help them achieve their goals or address their problems. So stop hoping for a music career and focus on a new job of waiting tables. Go to college for a degree in finance. Just do nothing. Ask unemployment for an extension. Borrow money from his sponsor. Perform on Hollywood Boulevard for tips. Live on the streets as a way to save money. Look for a less exhausting job so he can still focus on music. And start a good old GoFundMe campaign. Okay. And so, even when you know, as the clinician, that there's quite a few solutions on here that are not good at all and that are actually maladaptive and harmful, it can actually spark some adaptive thinking and options for our clients. And it also demonstrates that by allowing your clients to navigate through generating these solutions, that you're helping them be empowered to make, their decisions for themselves, that autonomy, right? And, at times an option that we think might be silly is not so silly and could be serious for the client. All right, so there is worksheets in that PDF toolkit that helps with decision making. So now that we, not we, excuse me, now that Eddie has laid out some of the solutions, the alternative solutions, the next step is to, in motivational interviewing, what we would do, right, with a decisional balance scale if or decisional balancing. If you all are familiar with principles of MI, so problem-solving therapy has this tool sheet, which is a decision-making worksheet. And so on this worksheet, Eddie will get to lay out each of those solutions and then talk it through. Will it work? Can I carry it out? What will be the personal effects? What would be the social effects? And the prompts on this worksheet indicates to use a plus or minus system as you know, or even a scale 0 to 10 for each alternative solution to identify you know, will it work? Is it a positive? Is it a negative? How high on a scale of 0 to 10 Eddie, do you feel in carrying out this solution? Or on a scale of 1 to 10 or 0 to 10 even, what are the chances or opportunities that the solution will actually even work out? So after Eddie identifies with your help and assistance on that alternative solutions worksheet, he decides that some of those alternative solutions might be maladaptive, might not, might be harmful, might not be even reasonable to carry through, given where he is at in this stage of his life. And so the solutions that Eddie, with your guidance, narrows in on that he sees are actually realistic are working hard at music and hoping for success before his unemployment benefits run out, borrowing money from his sponsor, performing on Hollywood Boulevard for tips, stop hoping for a music career and focus on a new job of waiting tables, looking for a less exhausting job so that he can still focus on music, and starting a GoFundMe campaign. So here's a table that lays out. Now that Eddie has honed in on some of the more attainable and maybe more feasible alternative solutions, you encourage Eddie to take it to the next level, right? And going back to that worksheet, this one, looking at, excuse me, the outcomes, so personal effects, social effects, what will be the outcomes, the potential outcomes of these solutions that you generated, Eddie? So, for option one, working hard at music, hoping for a success before unemployment works out. One of the possible outcomes is that it is possible, but maybe unlikely. Eddie feels like he does not have enough time to have a professional quality recording. So Eddie moves on to the next alternative solution. Stop hoping for a music career and focus on a new job of waiting tables. And identifies that this, sorry, that shit, this, it should say, this could work, but he feels that he might get depressed and feel that he has lost meaning and purpose in the world. The next option, borrowing money from his sponsor. Eddie recognizes that this is not respecting boundaries, but he thinks it might work and it could actually buy him another month. And performing on Hollywood Boulevard. This might be a good way to get his name out there, he decides, but he's not sure exactly how much income and money generation that would provide for him. So he looks at the outcome of looking for a less exhausting job so he can still focus on music. And he decides that this might work, but waiting tables typically pays better than the other jobs that he has had in the past. And lastly, he explores starting a GoFundMe campaign and decides that he likes the idea. However, he's a bit worried that others will think he is a fraud. So I hope through that vignette, you're able to get a sense of one of the core components of PST, which is, helping your client with planful problem solving, right? And using generations of alternative solutions and identifying those all the potential solutions. And I keep saying identifying, without being mindful that it is truly your client who you want to support and empower in identifying those solutions to their given problem. And then supporting them in identifying all the things that could both socially and personally be an outcome as a result of that particular option. Yeah, it's pretty self-explanatory. That is a great thing about problem-solving therapy. So we are going to wrap up with another vignette. We'll end off here with Raphael. So Raphael wants to drink with his friends in the park. However, if he returns to his housing drunk again, he will get kicked out. He hasn't seen his friends for a week because his FSP team has been lining him up with multiple appointments, and he started new medications that have been making him sleepy. However, he feels awake today and has nothing on his agenda. He knows that his friends are out there because they always are, and he hasn't had a drink in 1 week. He could really use a cold or warm beer. All right. So the follow-up questions here. So remember, it is your client who is framing and defining the problem itself. And so if you were Raphael, how would you state the problem from your lens? And I will go back to the vignettes. All right. So if you were Raphael, how would you state what the perceived problem is in your life at this time? I don't get to hang out with my friends anymore. Could boredom be a problem? I only will challenge that just to encourage you to not make assumptions, since clients, well, I see maybe where you got that. It's implied, I guess, has nothing on his agenda. But just be careful of the assumption piece. But I see how you probably got that from the implication that he has nothing on his agenda. So sure, boredom could be another potential problem. And client voice is not sleepy. He's awake and he has nothing to do for today. The urge to drink. Correct, because he knows that if he drinks again, or excuse me, if he returns drunk again, and he will get kicked out. He wants to see friends, but might end up drinking. Correct. Yep. I can't see my friends because my housing is too restrictive. That is very client voiced. Absolutely. He hasn't been social and hasn't had autonomy in his schedule. The stress is causing him to want to drink. Okay. So this is our therapeutic hat on. And I understand that we don't have a Raphael to role play with a little bit here. So however, if client was directly in the room, it would be straight from what he's stating. So we'll use the vignette as what he has shared with his FSP counselor. And so he hasn't directly acknowledged that he's stressed, although I see that we can see that. But I'm definitely in agreement that the problem, Raphael, would more than likely define this problem as ultimately the dilemma is he wants to see his friends, but what happens when he sees his friends? They drink. And if he gets drunk, he is going to put his housing on the line with this underlying problem of boredom. And I like that. I can appreciate that because he did state that he has nothing on his agenda for the day. Let's say that Raphael identifies the problem as I want to drink and hang out with my friends, but I don't want to lose my housing. I think we could say we're in agreement with that. So what would the goal be If that is the identified problem, then what is the goal for Raphael in addressing this problem? And to reframe, right, we can consider the goal as the top priority. So, what is Raphael's top priority? We have the problem. He doesn't want to lose his housing, but he does want to hang out with his friends and he does want to drink. So, what from that would be a top priority for Raphael? Meet with friends, but not to drink, especially, oh, if he's taking the meds. Great point about the medications, actually. Not lose housing. Yeah. Maintain friendships and socialization without risk of housing. Okay, so we're getting more specific with the goal. Great. Yeah, being able to see friends and keep housing. Hanging out with friends while drinking in moderation. It's a great vantage point. I'm in agreement that the goal or the top priorities for Raphael, given this particular problem, are a little twofold. So definitely see that there is a consensus that you all feel that a top priority for him is being able to see his friends, maintaining that social circle without the risk of losing his housing at the same time. So I definitely agree to that. And I do agree with Roberts about the drinking piece because that is a priority. He hasn't had a drink and he really wants one. He's made that clear. So considering that, once again, this is what our clients are voicing about, you know, what their needs are, what their priorities are. I absolutely agree with what you all have stated, and it's a little twofold. So it's top priorities maintaining the housing, top priorities seeing his friends, hanging out with them. Excuse me, and also top priority is having a beer. And ideally, I think someone did, yeah, in moderation, right? Because he does recognize that if he does drink to the point of being drunk, then that's going to put his housing at risk. Excellent work. Excellent work, y'all. So, last question then. What are the possible solutions? So, this is the fun part, or I think it's the fun part because this is where, and we're going to, for the sake of the vignette, have to pretend. Now we are Raphael in this situation because it's not us. We're not going to be the ones coming up with the solutions for our clients. It's going to be our clients coming up with the solutions that they see. And keep in mind, right, the solutions, it's encouraged that they should have variety. So if you were working with Raphael, you would want to make sure that he's aware that the more solutions, the better. It's quantity. Yes, quantity at this point, not necessarily quality. Right? So tell him, throw up all the ways that you see that you are able to address your goals on the board here. Even if they you know, might, even if you think, Raphael, that they might be foolish or I might not approve of them, ignore that. What is it that you think are solutions for your top priorities that you have acknowledged? Okay, so top priorities for Raphael, hanging out with his friends, drinking in moderation, maintaining his housing. So what if we were Raphael, what do we think he would say are some solutions? Yeah, he might say, I want to reduce my drinking. For sure, that's a reasonable solution. He might even say, going back to the medications, they're new, they've been making him sleepy, and he hasn't seen his friends in a week because of these multiple appointments that he's had to have. and then being sleepy. So he might even say as a solution to achieving his goals, he might stop taking his medication, or he might even flake out on some appointments in the future in order to maintain that connection with friends. That Raphael might say, maybe I can hang out with my friends, but I should be careful what I drink because of the medication. He could say that. Yeah. So he could add to his possible solutions. So there's this harm reduction that I'm seeing you all saying, Sarah and Robert. So him being mindful of how much he's drinking. I threw out there, he might altogether just say, forget the medications. I'm just not going to even take them because it's more of a priority for me to hang out with my friends. He might even invite the friends over to his housing, whether that be a room or units, not clear. But he might invite them over and he might see that as a solution. And that could come with different consequences. But at this point, remember, Raphael's just throwing out any solution that could address the priority of seeing friends, hanging out, and having housing. So that could be an option. Instead of him going to meet the friends in the park, he might invite them over and say, come over, y'all. Let's, we could drink here. Once again, even though that might be putting his housing at risk, could be a solution. I know this requires a bit more some type of thoughts and being creative and change the rules at housing. Meaning, so would you say that Raphael might tell his workers that they need to change the rules? Is that what you're saying? And that, yeah, okay, got it. I started laughing because that is not far-fetched. That I've worked for transitional housing, and that is a really go-to client decision when they feel out of control of the goals and needs that they have, although they might be in competition with the goals and needs of the program. And they some are vocal and might just, yeah, recommend, well, it's you guys' fault that I'm violating the rules because they're too strict. So I love that. That was very creative for sure. I am confident that you all have gotten this part down. So, for a quick recap, we're just gonna slide over. We're gonna pick Raphael back up, however, for day two. But today, so far, let's see what you have successfully added to your toolkit. You've added planful problem solving to your toolkit. And through Eddie's vignettes and Raphael, you've learned how to help the client define a problem, determine a realistic set of goals, or what those priorities are associated with the problem. You've helped client develop ranges of solutions. With Eddie, we went a little bit further, deciding on a solution. Or maybe we did not, excuse me, we might not have. But we'll stop there. We definitely developed the range of solutions and then defined problems and goals. So we are making our way through learning planful problem solving skills as outlined in PST. And ultimately, that is all serving as enhancing the client's positive problem orientation and decreasing negative problem orientation and minimizing the avoidance, the impulsivity. So before we close out for today, I should have done this in the beginning. Forgive me, but I love scale questions. So on a scale of 0 to 10, 10 being I feel super empowered and excited and confident about implementing some of these tools with my clients after today. And one being, Danielle, you need to do better and let's continue to work on this and help me feel more empowered. about using these skills and tools of my clients. So where do you land today? Scale to 1 to 10 on your own confidence, on your own self-efficacy and utilizing some of these tools of PST with your clients. Yay, these are great numbers to be at for today. I'm honestly very impressed that you all resonate with these numbers. No judgment wherever you land. But I think that that's a fair assessment and a fair place to be at, given this is day one and we haven't even gotten through all of the tools yet that you can utilize and that I hope that you will after the training. So thank you for sharing that feedback with me. Thank you so much for today, for your participation and your engagement. I'm looking forward to day two, and I hope you all have an empowering, since that's going to be our word, empowering rest of your evening and day tomorrow. Thanks for joining.